From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 97 of Little Brother for the 13th of August, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. I don't even know why you would do that. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me. My email address is critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. It should come as no surprise to any of you to hear from me that your technology snitches on you. I've talked about phones and security cameras, but what about your car? NBC News is reporting about a murder that took place in Kalamazoo, Michigan that was solved by clues recorded in the car that the perpetrator had stolen. It turns out that the hands-free system in the car had recordings of the perpetrator's voice because he had used that system to call up, shall we say, some murder tunes. The voice of Joshua Wessel was captured by the system and apparently stored there. And these recordings were played to his relatives, including his wife, who were able to identify him. This is but one of the many ways in which a contemporary car may be tracking you and leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. In addition to hands-free systems, many cars also have cellular connectivity, which brings us back to the whole thing about cell phones being a snitch. As I have repeated many, many times. Do you still have a printer? I do. Did you finally manage to find one that works and just keeps working? Printers are one of the biggest pains in the ass for those of us trying to keep computer systems running. College Humor actually did a great animation on the topic titled, "Your Printer is a Brat." And now, printers are preparing for retirement before you even take them out of the box. You think I'm kidding? Fight for Repair has recently run a piece about Epson printers, which, after years of reliable service, will simply stop dead. The message on the screen says, quote, "A part inside your printer is at the end of its service life. Service is required," end quote. In their opinion, the printer is just too old to keep running. There is an official Epson reset utility that can bring it back to life, but only if you run Windows. Mac and Linux users are without a viable reset option, as are Windows 11 users. Jared Mosch is the hero that we all need. Mosch lives in a rural part of Michigan where land-based internet access doesn't exist. Didn't exist. Back in 2021, finding out that Comcast wanted $50,000 to set up internet access for him and his neighbors, that AT&T was going to stop offering DSL to new customers, he built his own internet service provider, offering service to his home and about 30 of his neighbors, solving a problem that had been exacerbated by the pandemic. He's in the news again this month as his small internet provider is not quite so small anymore. He currently has over 400 customers and another 100 homes that he could potentially reach, offering fiber-based service for $55 a month, 100 megabits, and no caps. That is right in line with the kind of speeds and prices that you see in the city. If you want something done right, sometimes you just gotta do it yourself. Back in December of 2020, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, tentatively awarded a grant of $886 million to SpaceX with the idea that Starlink would be able to provide broadband internet service in a bit over 640,000 areas in 35 states that had been identified as unserved or underserved. I wonder if Mr. Moshe's area was one of them. The FCC's goal was to provide gigabit service to about 85% of the areas of interest to them, and at least 100 megabits to 99.7% of those areas. It seems, though, that SpaceX has not been able to meet this goal, with an advertised throughput of 50 to 200 megabits generally, and a price tag of $600 to set up and $110 a month for service. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel has stated that while the technology does hold promise, it appears as though the performance of Starlink internet service has actually decreased over time. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. It's been a busy week. We've got three. First up, we have Twitter. It seems as though the short message social platform had a zero-day vulnerability get discovered by a threat actor who goes by the handle of Devil. Devil was able to acquire the account information from a bit over 5.4 million Twitter accounts. Twitter has since patched the vulnerability. Now, I know it sounds like I'm giving that one the short end of the stick, but honestly, it's not all that interesting. Twitter is a publication platform, so while there is information that it should keep contained, it's really there to spread data more than to contain it. Our second pwn this week comes to us from Sophos, so we don't actually know the name of the victim because obviously it's their client and they are not going to tell. But what is remarkable about this one is that they were pwned not by one, not by two, but by three separate threat actors. The victim, they did say, is an auto parts supplier, and they were attacked simultaneously by the Lockbit, Hive, and Black Cat ransomware gangs. According to Sophos, dual pwns have happened now and then, but this is the first triple pwn that they have ever seen. This third one, however, is very disturbing. It seems as though two British schools, Wootton Upper School and Kimberley College, were both pwned by the Hive ransomware group, one of the three from the previous item, and they are demanding an astounding £500,000 ransom collectively from the schools. Seriously? £500,000 from a school? Seriously, £500,000 from a school. Here's how they arrived at that figure. It seems that once they were able to breach the school's systems, Hive were able to find information about the school's cyber insurance policies, which, no surprise, was stored on the school's systems. Hive knew how much coverage these schools had, and that was what they asked for. if they haven't already done so, the insurance providers need to start pushing a message that I have been pushing for a while now. Come on, say it with me. Patch your systems. The thing that I've been warning about for several weeks now has now happened. In Nebraska, a teenage girl and her mother are currently facing criminal charges in the state for abortion. That's not really the interesting part. There is no question about what the law says about this. Like it or not, abortions past 20 weeks are illegal in the state of Nebraska, and this one took place at 23. I'm not here to argue whether this is right or wrong, or whether or not I approve. If you've been listening to the show, you probably already know my views here, but that's not what's important. What is important is how this went down. You see, the mother and daughter in this case discussed what they were doing, and they discussed it on Facebook Messenger, and they discussed it in SMS text messages. This is where the third-party doctrine rubber hits the prosecution road. So the third-party doctrine, as I've mentioned before, is the idea that people who voluntarily give information to third parties, such as your phone company in the case of a text message, or Meta in the case of using a Facebook Messenger, that these people have no reasonable expectation of privacy in that information. If the government wants the data, they can serve a warrant or a subpoena, not on you, but on a company that you've done business with. Or not, actually. Sometimes all they have to do is send a letter and ask. In the period prior to 1973, before the Roe decision made abortion legal across the country, the technological edge that prosecutors have these days didn't exist, largely because we, on the whole, didn't use so much in the way of electronic communications. Telephone lines could be monitored or tapped or recorded, of course, but only at considerable expense in time, effort, materials, and equipment. The type of analog tape that was available at the time had a very limited density, although clearly that didn't stop, say, Richard Nixon from using it, but it wouldn't have been practical to tap every phone line all the time, like it is now. Even if you could, how would you process all of the audio? In 1973, there was no AI. AI was science fiction. HAL didn't exist. No speech-to-text system existed to look for key phrases, even. There is now. But making things easier now, there is also a tendency, now versus then, to use the written word in the place of the spoken. In the 70s and earlier, you could send a telegram, of course, but that wasn't something you did casually. It was expensive, and it still required somebody to deliver the message at the end of the line because, unlike today, we didn't have the functional equivalent of a telegraph riding around in our pockets. Today, though, we send text messages very casually. I've probably sent and received a few dozen of them just while writing this article. All of it casual chit-chat with my friends. It is so easy to fall into that habit and pattern of behavior. Anyway, what's important to understand about electronic communications is this. Unless you are certain that it is secure, you need to assume that anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You know those words. Those are the ones that cops used to be required to recite to you when you were being arrested. Not that that's required anymore either. Getting back to the case at hand, the Nebraskan mother and daughter who started this discussion do appear to have broken the law. I'm not defending that. At least, not here, not now. What I want you to take away from this discussion, though, is this. Something that might be legal today might not be tomorrow. Something legal that you do legally today might not be legal tomorrow. And if your insecure text communications show you participating in a particular behavior, it's reasonable to suspect that it might continue. The only solution is to make sure that all of your communications are secure, no matter how trivial. Mine are, and you need to do the same sooner rather than later. Well, this is fucking disgusting. Next month, MGM Television, which is owned by Amazon, will be premiering a new television series called Ring Nation. Ring Nation will be hosted by comedian Wanda Sykes and will feature video clips captured by Ring surveillance cameras. Ring also being owned by Amazon. I talked about this last week about how Ring cameras upload all of the wonderful video that they capture to the cloud, obviously to storage facilities owned and operated by Amazon. I talked last week and also a minute or two ago about the third-party doctrine, which says that once this data has been handed over to a third party, there is no expectation of privacy. So, here we are. The lack of privacy has been exploited for a buck a number of times in a number of ways before, but this one is the boldest, most bald-faced, most egregious example to date. It's advertising, obviously. It'll sell more Ring cameras as people try to get their footage onto the show. It's gonna have people doing stupid shit in front of Ring cameras in order to get themselves on the show. But it's also propaganda. Amazon wants you to be very comfortable with the idea of having these devices all around you, all the time, always watching you. And this show helps to normalize this. We need to resist this. This is not okay. Constant surveillance by a corporate overlord is not the American dream. It is a dystopian nightmare, and we cannot accept it. My request of you, dear listener, is do not watch this show. Tank its ratings so that the propaganda cannot continue. As one of my favorite political commentators is very fond of saying, anyway, it's just a thought. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week. This week, the fail goes to Google. On Sunday afternoon, there was an electrical explosion at one of Google's core data centers in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Several hours later, around 1:30 UTC Monday morning, which is about 9:30 p.m. Sunday here on the East Coast, or about 6:30 p.m. Sunday on the West Coast, Google and a few other Alphabet-owned web services went down. I was actually watching something on YouTube at the time. DownDetector.com reported a peak of about 30,000 outage reports during the failure. Services were quickly restored, however, with the number of sites and services that depend on Alphabet-owned services, this blip had the potential to bring very widespread ripple effects and chaos. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Ed, Ron, Joe Cadillac, Michael Bronstein, Julie Bernstein, Fongaboo, and Knight Rider 007 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Tentatively awarded grant of $866 million. Nope, that's the wrong number. Twitter has since patched the vulnerability. Yeah. Get your tang untangled, Chuck. Short edge of the stick. Yep. Wooten. That's it. Okay, let's try that again. From the tool schools. Yes. No speech to text to look for key phrase. But only at considerable extents. We'll be premiering a new television series. Comedian Rwanda Sykes. Google and a few other alphabet omed. Yep, okay. On Monday morning, which is about 9:30 p.m. here on the East Coast on Sunday. Let's start that one more time. Monday morning, I hope. All right, let's do it again. I said Sunday again, didn't I? Yep. I'm going to go all the way to the start.